Welcome to the show, everybody. We're Cairo Knights, Mason Mike, hanging out with you on a Monday. Frank Shires is here, of course, bringing the news at the top and bottom of the hour. And DB, David Burbank, is controlling the ones and twos. My heart's heavy tonight, guys. That's it. I mean, you know, lots of times I love to come on this show and be a big personality and have a lot of fun, and that's the kind of guy I am. You know, be a distraction from a lot of the bad stuff that's happening in the world. But I can't do that tonight. There are too many people who cannot avoid what's happening around the country, and so we're going to spend quite a bit of time tonight, not the entire show, but quite a bit of time tonight talking about what's been happening here in our city, in our state, and around the country. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You were out all weekend doing some reporting. You're down in the mix.
Yep.
Downtown. I heard some of it. There was
great stuff.
Weekend coverage. Yeah, you and Hannah, and I know Colleen was here, and Diane, like the whole crew. Everybody sort of chimed in and helped out, and I hope to hear some first-person accounts as we go through the night about what you saw.
Yeah, I mean, there probably isn't really a need, you know, at this particular point.
Yeah.
I think people have seen it.
Yeah.
It was that. It was pretty chaotic. It's difficult as a reporter to sort of figure out exactly what's going on other than what's happening right in front of you.
Mm.
But it was. I haven't been through an evening like that, quite like that in Seattle. I mean, there's been a couple. May Day went off a little bit like that, not quite as much. Certainly WTO was very much like that. But I wasn't here. I wasn't up here at that particular point. So, yeah, it's one of those things that you always try to look for and hope for, that it's you're turning a corner on something. You mean that? But that clearly there's a lot of people who feel like we haven't turned that corner yet. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, we're going to get to our top story here tonight. And that's basically everything that's going on here. We're the weekend, as you all know, there were protests that surrounded the murder of 46-year-old George Floyd by four Minneapolis police officers. Here's what happened around the country and in the state of Washington. Here in Seattle, Mayor Jenny Durkan announced a curfew for the city today, which began about an hour ago. Here's more with Cairo Radio's Aaron Granillo.
The curfew runs from 6 p.m. until 5 a.m. The third consecutive night, Mayor Jenny Durkan is telling people to stay home. It comes as the city gears up for more protests tonight after Durkan says criminals hijacked peaceful weekend demonstrations.
By midday Sunday, there were hundreds of buildings damaged, including more than 90 businesses in Chinatown International District.
Police say nobody was seriously hurt, but six officers suffered injuries. Nearly 60 people were arrested, mostly for burglary and assault.
The citywide curfew over the weekend was from 5 p.m. to 5 a.m. That was on Saturday and Sunday evenings. And cities throughout the country have imposed similar curfews. Places like Minneapolis, Atlanta, L.A., Washington, D.C., they continue to see huge crowds marching. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo was in a press conference earlier this morning and said this.
Legally, I can impose a curfew. So I'm not at that point, but I know something has to be done because last night was not acceptable and the night before was not acceptable on any level.
And Governor Cuomo and New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio reached a breaking point earlier tonight and moved to impose an 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz had this to say over the weekend.
So I want to just call out very, very clearly, as we put a presence on the street to restore order, it is to open that space to seek justice and heal what happened. I will not in any way not acknowledge that there's going to be that pain, but my first and foremost responsibility to the state of Minnesota is the safety and security of all citizens. We cannot have the looting and the recklessness that went on. We cannot have it because we can't function as a society. And I refuse to have it take away the attention of the stain that we need to be working on is what happened with those fundamental institutional racism that allows a man to be held down in broad daylight. And thank God a young person had a camera to video it.
Meanwhile, in Seattle, Mayor Jenny Durkan spoke during a press conference on Saturday afternoon, commending peaceful protesters across the city while condemning the few who turned these peaceful demonstrations into riots.
To see the peaceful protests go forward with thousands of people there listening, to hear the fiery speeches and the calls for justice by the speakers, and yet blocks away people starting fires, causing destruction.
The mayor also addressed the concerns that officers around the city were using excessive force on demonstrators.
There has been a number of reports about officers using force over the last 2 days. During the demonstrations, all uses of force will undergo a high level of scrutiny and review.
Mayor Durkan spoke today as well, highlighting the escalated riots that took place last night.
Literally, in a matter of minutes, there were multiple fires and Molotov cocktails being thrown. At the same time, demonstrators were marching on the highway into oncoming traffic. And a few minutes later, there were reports of assaults on officers, accelerants being poured at the SPD headquarters, and crowds gathering.
But the mayor remained firm that acts of violence and aggression shown over the last few days will not drown out the larger message that protesters are looking to make.
I want to emphasize that the message of protesters here and across the nation, that we need to be honest about that and need to do better to dismantle structural racism and end police violence, was not and could not be drowned out by the acts of looting, destruction, and violence.
Cities all around the King County metro area have seen the effects of protests over the weekend, with many tipping over into riots. Last night, especially over on the east side. In Bellevue, where riots did break out last night, Police Chief Steve Milette claimed that destruction found throughout their city was specifically organized by gang groups.
They planned this. They have tactics to defeat police tactics. They have been successful up to this point. They try to spread law enforcement resources in multiple directions. So we're responding and we're making adjustments as we go along to the situation.
Chief Milette argued that most demonstrators look to simply act on their First Amendment rights.
We welcome peaceful protesting. We want citizens to exercise their First Amendment rights. But a large contingent of this group came here with the intent to destroy property and steal things and assault police officers.
Milette was recorded speaking directly to protesters last night, and he was answering their questions.
I don't want anybody to look at what I represent, the uniform I wear or the color of my skin in this uniform, and fear that I'm going to harm you, because I'm not going to.
I want to pause right here for a second and just say there was a lot of bad news, but there was a lot of good news. There was just a lot of news this weekend. And I was glued to the internet looking at all of it. And this was one of my favorite stories, because when you are the chief of police of a place, you have a unique position. And when you say something like this, when you take the time to stand out at a demonstration that's at its core about police brutality, and you come to the people and you talk to them and you spend time and you answer questions, That one person's actions, it just means a whole lot. And I think that was a great thing that he did.
Yeah, it's why it's been mentioned nationally.
Right.
And other sheriffs who have done the same, other police chiefs who have done the same. The Baltimore police chief is another example of somebody who actually marched with the protesters. I think that what people sometimes don't understand is police resent bad, over-aggressive cops, too. Mm-hmm. You know, there may be a, you know, don't ask, don't tell culture at times. But I don't think that it makes the world is not safer when cops have to fear what other cops are doing.
Right.
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 And I think sometimes people forget that they, I think, by and large, would love to see bad cops eradicated immediately from the force, because it doesn't make anyone safer, not the public and not other law enforcement.
No. So the city of Kirkland put out a notice today, and it encouraged businesses to close at 1 p.m. and secure their buildings and valuables. And that came after authorities say that they received a tip through social media that riots would take place this evening in downtown Kirkland. Here's city spokeswoman Kelly Stickney.
We've received information that there could potentially be a protest downtown in Kirkland today, as well as this other associated criminal activity that seems to be seizing on the opportunity of these protests.
Like many city leaderships, Stickney claims that Kirkland's police department supports peaceful protests.
Our hearts go out to the family of George Floyd. We condemn the acts that occurred. We're absolutely supportive of people using their freedom of speech, but we also need to deter the criminal acts and looting that's occurred.
And several other cities have now imposed curfews for the public. The running list so far, Bellevue, that started at 5 and lasts until 5 a.m. tomorrow. Auburn starts at 9 p.m. That's to 5 a.m. Issaquah's curfew is about 45 minutes from now to 6 a.m. And Linwood is 5 p.m. Already going until 5 a.m. Now, roughly 350 members of the National Guard have been deployed today throughout Washington in an attempt to curb any demonstrative violence. Here's Major General Brett Daugherty today.
We have approximately 300 soldiers and airmen that are in position this evening to handle any threat that might come up. And we'll be back where we were last night, clearly in Seattle, Bellevue, Spokane.
Major General Daugherty told Cairo Radio that none of the members of the National Guard will be armed tonight.
We're not armed because we don't want somebody shot by accident. And the more weapons there are at a site, the more likely you are to have an accidental shooting.
Now, I like this, for one, because I think, as far as I've seen, there are lots of people to blame here, and they are in each of their groups, small little pockets, where you have the majority of people out there protesting, peaceful people trying to get their voices heard, trying to get their message across, and trying to affect some change, and then you have opportunists who swoop in and try and cause chaos and sow division. And I think that goes for law enforcement as well. I've seen, you know, some law enforcement members trying to do what they can do to keep things peaceful and really doing good work. But then you've also got a handful of folks who are overly aggressive, who are acting out of, I don't know, fear or malice or whatever it is that seem to be overly aggressive. So I think the idea of having folks there who are not armed really does send an important message that we're not just trying to clamp down on you when you're trying to express yourself. Because when you do that, when you restrict people, when you clamp down on a situation, that pressure just builds and things get hotter and eventually they explode. And nobody wants to see that.
I think it was a smart decision to send out the National Guard without weapons. I think that sends the two messages that they're trying to send. One, that we want to keep the situation in control and we want to keep the protesters safe, as well as the business people and the citizens who are there to watch and everyone else in the city safe. The second message it sends is that we know that sending the National Guard out is not meant to be a police act,
right,
in a traditional sense. And that it is actually, it's an understanding of the nuance of when you send in the National Guard, which also responds to floods and responds to other emergencies, that we are here to help. We're not here as a paramilitary or a military organization, mm-hmm, to achieve military ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a really important thing, especially when you look at the U.S. and the history of using the military. There's always a great hesitancy to use the military in any way against U.S. citizens within the borders. And I think that this is a recognition of that history and of an effort to tamp down on a potentially violent situation while not exacerbating the pressure on the situation.
Yeah, it's right there in the saying, serve and protect. Like, law enforcement is there to protect. I don't like when things lean into war and sounding like war and feeling like war, because the objective in war is to crush your enemy. Totally. It's total dominance, and that should never be the way that we do things here. Let's talk about Trump for a second. President Trump had a press conference today, and he asked governors to take more decisive action against protesters, and he threatened to involve the U.S. military.
Today, I have strongly recommended to every governor to deploy the National Guard in sufficient numbers that we dominate the streets. mayors and governors must establish an overwhelming law enforcement presence until the violence has been quelled. If a city or state refuses to take the actions that are necessary to defend the life and property of their residents, then I will deploy the United States military and quickly solve the problem for them.
Meanwhile, governors across the country are refusing to act on Trump's threats. In fact, Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, to the president's offer to send military reinforcements, he said,
"Thank you, but no thank you."
And the governors of Illinois and Michigan spoke out today as well. They rejected the president's authority in mobilizing the U.S. military against protesters. Active duty military troops have been deployed to Washington, D.C. That's after protests in the city ramped up through the weekend. This overwhelming show of force, this stuff, I mean, he's a coward. This is a coward's move. You roll in and you dominate. I find it shameful, honestly.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to get your head around. I do think that I think that cooler heads will prevail on this. I mean, remember, there's a portion of what he says is just as a provocateur, right? So he's just trying to get a reaction, keep the base mobilized, things like that. I mean, it's a pretty inward-looking act to say something like that. I'm not terribly worried about him mobilizing the U.S. military, which would take a long time to do. And this should be, we should be in a good situation before that would really be a threat. But I don't like the rhetoric any more than anyone else does, as much as I don't think that it's being done for purposes of mobilization, except to mobilize your base in a political situation. Right. I think that's what he's worried about mobilizing, not the military.
Yeah, I agree. Mayor Jenny Durkin put out a statement right before we got on the show here tonight that talked about how he doesn't have the authority, that the president doesn't have the authority to do this in this type of a situation. Yeah. I don't remember the act, but...
Yeah, it's very, very difficult. There is one sort of weird provision that could allow it, but it's more in the terms of it's designed around secession than it is around inefficiency or maybe not following a president's wishes. That seems to be expressly against the Constitution. But again, there's a history here of pretty artful interpretations of what the Constitution does and doesn't allow. I would assume that a former U.S. attorney would have at least a pretty decent grasp of that.
Coming up at 8 o'clock, John Scholes. He's the president and CEO of the Downtown Seattle Association. We're going to talk to him about the damage that has been done downtown and what that means for businesses and how really the downtown community has rallied around their neighbors. It's a great interview. It comes up at 8 o'clock. Rachel Bell, up next. Stay tuned, everybody. Cairo Nights.
You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell. You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell.
You know what? You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell.
Thank you. Finally. It's been how many years?
I know. You've been asking and asking. And
I've been ringing and ringing. And ringing you're like, and not mine. Mm-mm. Bring your own dang bell.
Not mine.
Yeah.
But I'm bringing my bell.
Wow. January 1st, 2020. Mark it on the calendar. Day I was allowed to ring his bell.
June.
It's like the dumbest dad joke. It's like, you know, the stupid radio joke where people are like, you don't have a face for radio.
Uh-huh.
Like people will say to me sometimes just like, you know, that you can ring my bell. And I'm like, It's like my best friend who's 6'2", and her last name is Small, and people are like, it's funny because you're really tall.
I feel so bad for tall people, like exceptionally tall people, because that's all anyone talks to them about.
Especially
like, so
if
you're
your
tall.
Last name is Small.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's awful.
Yeah.
What you got for us, Rach?
Well, I have a story of a different way to experience quarantine. If your home is feeling crowded during quarantine, imagine what it's like for people who have chosen to live the tiny home lifestyle.
So I lost my job in 2016. It was a career I'd done for 15 years. And so that was a huge deal at the time. And I knew that I didn't want to pay rent anymore in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Kristen Haynes had worked as a radio reporter. In fact, she used to work right here in Seattle at Como.
So luckily, my boyfriend had recently bought a sailboat. So I moved onto his boat, which is extremely affordable. And then 2 years later in 2018, I bought a van because I just needed somewhere where I could work and where I could store my clothes and my shoes, because I had this tiny sedan and just keeping all my clothes in the trunk was really not fun. And since then, we've been splitting time between the sailboat and the vans. We have these two tiny homes.
Just before the pandemic hit, they had docked their sailboat south of Los Angeles in the Ventura area.
And this whole area just felt really busy to us. There were way too many people walking around. The stores were packed. We just felt really uncomfortable being near people. So we decided to just go far away in our van, and we decided to go boondocking, which is where you find free campsites on national forests and Bureau of Land Management land. We did that in Arizona and in Eastern California, exploring deserts and mountains and these kind of off-roading four-wheel drive routes, just to stay away from everyone. So we didn't see a person for days sometimes when we were out there. And that's how we thought we could be the safest, as being way out in nature in our van, finding these free campsites kind of in the middle of nowhere.
For Kristen, it's not just a lifestyle, it's also her job. She uses her journalistic chops to write a blog that is now her sole income.
So The Wayward Home is a website dedicated to people who want to learn how to downsize and live smaller. So I cover everything from camper vans to RVs to boating to tiny homes. So kind of any kind of smaller living and ways for people to make an income on the road so they can make this lifestyle permanent.
Luckily for all us nosy people, Kristen is very transparent about money. She says the couple's average monthly expenses are only about $1,500 combined. And she makes between $6,000 to $10,000 a month from advertising revenue, affiliate income, and online courses she teaches on how to make blogging your career.
I just got an unlimited hotspot, which pretty much allows me to work anywhere. It's been phenomenal. One of my key considerations when I find a campsite is that I have to have internet access for my hotspot, or else we can't stay there. So we just camp for the day and I just sit outside the van in like the shade of my hatch and do work. And I have these amazing views and it feels good just to be sitting outside in nature. So I'll work in the morning and then we'll go on a hike and work more, you know, do yoga and then just cook dinner.
But even a nomad must dip back into society every so often.
Every time we would go into Walmart, we'd do our shopping once a week. We'd come directly back to the van and immediately wash our hands with soap and water. I think it's still important to be really vigilant about cleanliness. Like what we did is we had a hand washing station in the van, which we still have. And then we'd use the sanitizing wipes for our steering wheel and phones, and we'd wear gloves to pump gas. So I think still as people go camping this summer and maybe try boondocking, they have to be really careful.
Kristen and her partner traded square footage for freedom and adventure, which does come with its own challenges.
We're in the Mojave Desert National Preserve driving down a dirt road. Suddenly, I heard this loud hissing sound out my driver's door, and I looked out, and we had deflated two tires at once, and they were flat within like 30 seconds, which was absolutely crazy. And we're 5 miles from a paved road.
Since quarantine started, they've dealt with a campsite full of mice and a van swarmed with bees.
And so what we had to do is start driving away with the side door wide open on the van. And I was like running along next to the van, swatting the bees, trying to get them out, trying not to get stung.
But with a good sense of humor, these are just small blips in a big adventure. And Kristen prefers it to life in the city.
When we were in the van out in nature all the time, I felt just wonderful. Like just with the fresh air, and I don't have to wear a mask. I don't have to watch every single thing I touch. I don't have to worry about walking 6 feet away from anyone, like, and we felt free and liberated and we're outside. And that's where humans are happy, I think. But when we came back to the boat and, you know, in this really populated zone north of Los Angeles, I started to notice my anxiety going up and just everything starts to feel really kind of stressful and weird. And I pay more attention to the news when I shouldn't be. So I am looking forward to our next outdoor adventure somewhere, either in the boat or the van.
If you're curious about small living, either for a weekend or a lifetime, go to mynorthwest.com/Rachel Bell for a link to Kristen's blog. This is my dream.
Oh, me too.
I don't know if I could actually do it, but I like to think that I could, because talking to her, I just had this fluttery feeling and a feeling of jealousy. So she decided to do this, making money off the blog, because she started researching it and she saw this woman was making $100,000 a month and you can take classes. And so she's since taken 10 different courses on how to monetize a blog. And she said that's just the tip of the iceberg, that there's this crafting blog she follows where that woman makes $200,000 or $300,000 a month.
What?
Like people, if you can figure this out, I think you have to have a very specific niche. So yeah, for the small living, that's probably a small amount of people who want to do that. But when they want to do it, they want to do it. And they're going to click on your website.
You not only have to have that, my girlfriend, her sister, does this. Built her own career from nothing as an illustrator, but as a blogger as well. And she's become kind of prominent in England as a person who advocates for artists' rights of copyrights.
Because
people steal images all the time. And she literally got the Green Party to change its platform because they were sort of calling for an end. And she's got, I don't know, you know, 20,000 Twitter followers or more, 30,000, something like that. She's got a big presence, but she essentially started on LiveJournal, which no one even remembers anymore. Still has an active blog on LiveJournal, but she built that into an entire career. Now she's a fairly prominent children's book illustrator and advocate. But I guess my point about that is that while you can do it, I have watched how hard she works. Like, you have to be if you are in any way lazy or easily defeated, this isn't for you, because you have to have so much self-worth and self-confidence for the 300 rejections you get to one acceptance that it isn't easy. But if you can do it, it's super impressive. And having that level of, freedom would be a powerful thing.
Yeah, I think you have to learn a lot, because you're not just the content creator. You know, all of us in this room, we can write and we can speak, but it's like, you have to be your own accountant. You have to be the salesperson. You have to
PR,
you know,
and
exactly. Yeah, you have to do
bill
all
collector.
The roles. Yeah,
all
yeah, yeah.
That.
Right. I'm looking at her blog right now, thewaywardhome.com.
Yeah. I know.
Just, there's like tiny homes. There's like awesome Mercedes, like 4x4 Sprinter vans. There's blueprints for container houses. I love the idea of shipping containers and having them as like tiny homes. It's so cool.
I did the van life thing for like 3 weeks in New Zealand.
Right.
And so I know that I could do this for a year, because we were so not ready to be done after that short amount of time. I wouldn't be able to do a stationary tiny home, but the idea of being on wheels and making it an adventure, that's where it's at.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Rachel Bell.
Thanks, guys.
Love that story. You can hear Rachel Bell on the entire radio station all day long. She shows up constantly. And, of course, her podcast, Your Last Meal, wherever you get podcasts, or yourlastmealpodcast.com.
Me.
We'll be back for Kyra Nights after this. Welcome back into Kyra Nights, everybody. Mason, Mike. You know, no matter what state the world is in, no matter how shaky the ground underneath you may feel, it's good to know that the Cars for Kids song will always be here. It will be the cockroaches and the Cars for Kids jingle at the end of it all, I think.
Yeah, you can hope otherwise. Yeah. I have dreams of winning the lottery and buying out all available advertising stock just so it can't be run.
That's not a bad plan. Fascinating story. There is an app. I just found out about this. There is an app. It's about a year old. It's called Globe. Some folks in San Francisco made it. And what Globe does is it lets you rent places, like apartments and things like that, during the day for an hour at a time. And initially it was set up to be a place where, let's say you needed, you come into town and you just need a place to get ready for something, or you have some work to do, you have some important calls to make, and maybe you can't do that at home for whatever reason. You got kids running around or construction's happening or whatever it may be. But it turns out that they are seeing a huge increase in users and people on their wait list just to get involved in this, to just get away, specifically get away from the people that they're quarantined with. And I think, you know what? I am here for it. I think it's a great idea. I love it. Would you use this, Mike? It's about $40 an hour.
So would I use it to get away, or would I use it to make money in my own place?
Would you use it? Follow-up question. What would you use it for?
Well, I mean, this isn't my ambition, but when I read it, I thought of people using it for trysts mostly.
Yeah, right.
You know, I didn't actually think about people using it to get away from their partner. I thought, oh, all right, so we're just seeing the return of the hourly motel. And so, right. And I have zero doubt that that's exactly what it's being used for.
Oh, 100%.
You know? So So would I? No. I mean, I don't think that that's not necessary in my existence. But would I use it to get now? I mean, I can find other places. It's a little more. You can see the appeal in. So one of the things we have had as a benefit in Seattle, actually nationally, is to some degree, this started while we were rolling into early and then middle and now late spring. And we have outdoors to sort of, you know, create some distance, either go for a run or go to the park or go somewhere and read or something along those lines. I think in the dead of winter in Seattle, where it's really rainy and you're out, you've limited your outdoors. I mean, this is one thing as a side note, folks, anyone who fantasizes about living on a houseboat, understand that your available area for hanging out is gone in the winter, and you are inside in very small quarters because all of that lovely deck space where you fancy yourself sitting out there goes away in lousy weather. And so you are really confined to about 500 square feet in many cases. This is the problem for people in apartments and in houses come winter. And so would I use this? I don't know that I would get to the point where I would just need, I mean, you know, and I'm lucky in that I've got – I'm lucky and incredibly unlucky in that I've got an empty business right now where I can go to escape anytime I want. Yeah. And in fact, my girlfriend has taken to, because she's, you know, she and her friend formed this little bluegrass band. She's taken to referring to it as the most expensive practice place in Seattle because they've decided to start practicing down there. It's just two of them and they're keeping at an appropriate distance. But my point is that, so I have that in front of me. If I were living in New York in a bicycle shipping box and I needed some space away from my person, I guess I'd think about it, but it seems like an awful lot of money for an hour. It better be a good hour.
It does. Apparently some of the places are fancy schmancy and they are nice and clean. You know, you can, there's some accounts in this story here where people are like, they walked in and you could smell the cleaning products. Like everything was good. They do take precautions. You have to send them a picture and like verify your temperature and all that stuff. But I like what you said about houseboats. At some point we need to do a segment where we just diss houseboats. Because I didn't. That's another on the con list. Just no space to hang out if the weather is bad. That I want to add to what my friend Luke says are the two problems with houseboats is that you have all the problems of a house and all the problems of a boat
and none of the benefits of either.
Right.
Because you're not driving it around anywhere.
I mean, they're pretty. They're cool looking. I like looking at houseboats, but my goodness.
Yeah. No, I mean they're fine. They're fine. Just understand that. That when you look and rent one in the middle of summer, it becomes a very different, poorly insulated place come winter on many of them. Some of the floating homes are actually quite nice and big on the inside, but most of the ones, if you're a renter, are not.
I like the idea of having another place to go that is a home that feels, you know, lived in, because we've lost most of them. Like, I can't sit in a coffee shop anymore. I can't sit in a bar anymore and hang out and decompress and do that kind of stuff. And so the opportunity to, post up for an hour or two, hang out.
Absolutely.
Why not?
I mean, it is, I get the appeal. I get the appeal. I'm hoping that we get a little bit of that coming up soon, right? I mean, that once we enter phase two in Seattle and then phase three and then ultimately phase normal, if that ever happens again, would be great. I'm looking forward to that. I'm hoping I can hold out until then and not need to go the hourly rental rate.
Guys, stick around for 9 o'clock. Really, more than I've ever meant it. You need to stick around. Ray Roberts, former NFL player, he's a Seahawks analyst. Said some stuff on Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN this morning that you have to hear. But up next, president of the Downtown Seattle Association, John Scholes.